You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you turn to this, I really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give you information, asking for no good blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good Sunday evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. I am your host, Dave Hodges, and we come to you live every Sunday evening at this time, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. on the West Coast and 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on the East Coast. And we like to think of ourselves as the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And our country is indeed waking up. We've got a great show for you this evening. I just want a little program note here for next week. So some of you think, oh, we're getting too close to the holidays and don't have time to listen. Let me give you a reason to listen next week. We're going to have Cody Snodgrass on. He and I are doing a pre-record this week. CIA, Black Ops, yeah, you get the idea. And we're also having on Shauna Cox. Who's she? She was in the car when the LaVoy Finicum was riding in. They got shot at, which three occupants were wounded, and LaVoy was executed. And she is going to come on and tell her story, her side of things, and what she went through. She contacted me earlier in the week. So put off your Christmas shopping to another day. Going to be a great show next week. Anyway, third hour, we're going to be joined by my friend Paul Preston of Agenda 21 Radio. And Paul is going to be sharing with us the latest that's going on in California. And I just don't mean the wildfires. I mean the Cal exit and the whole nine yards there with Governor Brown. And it's quite the convoluted mess that's coming to a head. Hour number two, if he can get off his plane in time, Darren Dammy, my friend, now former talk show host of KTAR Radio here in the Phoenix area where I am from, and Darren had the most popular show ratings-wise, and we're going to talk about important issues to him and also what his plans are for the future. I don't think we've heard the last of Darren on KTR. I'm just speculating, but he's too popular. And in this first hour, we're going to be joined in just a moment by Teresa Martinez, who is the immigration point person for Congressman Paul Gosar. And we're going to be working on getting the congressman back on after the first of the year. And let me just tell you, a few people bring this show to you. They make this possible. We couldn't do it without their support. My friend Steve Quayle, he's converting what I hope is not going to be true, but it looks more and more that way, soon to be worthless cash, into precious metals, namely gold. And if you think the economy's in trouble, if you think the average person's losing ground because of inflation and so forth, and you need to get a significant amount of your cash reserves out of the bank and into precious metals where they hold their value, give Steve a call tomorrow at 406-586-4842. 406-586-4842. We're also brought to you by King Prepper, my good friend Bob Griswold, who I spoke with yesterday, and he's going to be coming on over the holidays. And anything you want to prepare for any eventuality, he's your guy. Bob Griswold, readymaderesources.com. And you know, here's the best thing about Bob. He's such a good guy. He does what most won't. He'll actually talk to you on the phone and consult with you about your needs. readymaderesources.com. And then finally, we're also brought to you by Numana. Every family. Now, FEMA's on the record now saying it used to be 3 days, then it was 14 days, then it was a month. And now the FEMA director is saying that preparation is a daily business. Well, that's Numana's view, too. We recommend 3 to 6 months, maybe a year on the outside. But storable food is a necessary requirement, I believe, for all American families now. The North Koreans are threatening EMP. I mean, you choose your poison. There are so many, I'm not going to run through them all. But you want to be prepared with storable food. And Numana is restaurant quality, no GMOs, no glyphosates. It's absolutely fantastic. Go to pneumana.com/Hodges. Again, that's pneumana.com/Hodges, and you can take 5% off using the coupon code Hodges9. Well, Teresa Martinez and I met because of my good friend, Joe Delgado, who I know from basketball circles, and Joe works in the office of our Arizona Secretary of State, Michelle Reagan, who I think is doing a fantastic job. And Joe introduced me to our next guest, and we had lunch together a few months ago up in Wickenburg, Arizona, a little town of 6,000 people, not too far from where I live. And I really found her to be fascinating. And as I said in the intro, she is the point person for immigration for Congressman Gozar here in Arizona. Teresa, welcome to the show. I'm really glad you could join us.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's get right down to it. We're on a border state, and there are many good men, women, and children who have come into our state, who have contributed to our state, and have contributed to the country. And this isn't about the quality of immigrants, but this is more about some of the practices associated with immigrants and the practice of trafficking and so forth that bring potential harm and danger to people living here. So let's start there. Where is the congressman, and of course yourself, where do your primary concerns lie with regard to immigration?
Well, first of all, and I know that the congressman will certainly agree to this, is we need to have great border security. It is extremely important to secure the border. And I know that a lot of people go on and on about securing the border. That is the utmost important thing, being able to control the border. Of course, we need immigration policies that allow immigration to work and do what it needs to do in an efficient manner without jeopardizing national security for people. And so that's where the primary point is how do we allow an immigration process to proceed, to get done what it needs to get done by vetting the right people, by making sure these people are who they say they are and they're able to come in and really enhance the United States. And how do we keep our country safe from people who want to come in and do it harm? And unfortunately, we have a lot of influx in the middle with people who are being used for ill-gotten gains. And what I mean by that is you get a lot of good people in the middle of bad people trying to come in using them. And so really the most important thing that we can do is secure the border, control the border, know who's coming across into our country, but be able to do it in an efficient manner while still providing enhancement to our country. These are good people, you know, when they come in the legal way, through the process. But we need to make it efficient as well as secure.
Well, it's not efficient. And here's what's amazing to me.
No, it's not at all.
If we go back to the 1880s and on into the 20th century, Ellis Island processed 13 million immigrants without the benefit of computers. And they had some really, I think, good common sense ideas. They quarantined people until they knew they weren't a health risk. They also told them, okay, you're here for 7 years, you can work, but you've got to learn to speak English. You have to pass a test on the Constitution, simple test, and you got to pass a simple test on American history so you can see how you fit in and how you can contribute to our society. But now, Teresa, it's just kind of like ollie-ollie oxen free, and there's no requirements for anybody to do anything to come into our country.
And unfortunately, that is the system. One of the things that I do for Congressman Gozar is we do a lot of constituent work for immigration. And what we have found is we have to speak government in a way that the government bureaucrats understand. A congressman's office is very tight-knit. The employees are handpicked, and we are at will. You know, we must perform. Whereas a lot of federal employees are looking for, you know, they've been doing this for 20 years, they're in a rut, or maybe they're not crazy about their job anymore, maybe they're not, you know, they don't have the best intentions, because really, it's like we're fighting the bureaucracy to get things in through the right way. And I'll give you an example. I'm working a case for a woman who immigrated, well, who is in the United States legally from Egypt. She has basically told immigration that she's being abused domestically and that she was seeking asylum. Because she is seeking asylum, we must now deal with the asylum office. So the lady in the asylum office says to me, well, great, she qualifies for an expedited interview so that we can interview her, because without the proper documentation, she can't work, she can't stay here legally, she's in limbo right now. We got to get this process so that we know if she's staying or if she's going. So basically what the asylum office said is, well, since we don't have an asylum office in Arizona, she'll have to use the one in L.A., and so we're going to go ahead and set her up an appointment in Arizona. Great. Everything's lovely. The first one we get. 2 weeks later, I have not heard of when this appointment or when the representative from the asylum office is going to come to Arizona. I haven't even heard a date. So I send her off an email. Hey, when's that date for this constituent? This is a high priority. She then says, 3 days later, oh, well, we have her appointment scheduled on the 18th in December. Great, wonderful. She fails to tell me that the appointment is in Los Angeles. After she specifically had a conversation with me that it was going to handle in Arizona. So now the email goes back to, wait a minute. You said in Arizona, we're waiting for the officer to come in Arizona. What she didn't understand, or what the asylum officer worker didn't know, was that I was actually going to immigration briefing. We get quarterly updates from immigration themselves. And they happened to mention that the asylum workers were in Arizona that week. So now I got to go back and fight with her as to why there's a mix-up. Why are you sending her to L.A.? Why are you sending, you know, why did she miss the December 7th date in Arizona? You know, and it's really, it's like some of the people in the government, not all of the people, some of them are very good, but some of them fight you every step of the way. They it's almost like they're throwing up these hurdles so that they can keep you on the hook. Like we're going to run out of people to process and they're going to lose their jobs. You know, that's not going to happen. And so it's really, the government has become too big and with too many levels that interfere with actually getting the work done. And that's really what the sad part is I think that the efficiency has just gone to the wayside because we have a lot of bureaucrats in the process that are mucking it up, whether on purpose or, you know, lack of skills. I don't know, and I'm not going to try to speculate as to why the process is being mucked up. And basically what our office does is we go and we immediately zero in and we try to hold them accountable. Some agencies are better than others. We fight with the Veterans Office. 80% of our cases are dealing with the Veterans Administration. And we have to really hold them accountable and try to get people through the process.
In your opinion, deviate just for a second because I want to come back to immigration, but we have by reputation one of the worst, if not the worst, Veterans Administration facility and procedures here in Arizona. And our politicians have been very, very outspoken about how bad it is and how badly they want to correct it. What's the status, in your opinion, right now of this reform? Has there been meaningful reform or not?
Oh, there has been. There has been. The government, and lack of a better word, and please, for you know, your audience, forgive me for lack of a better word. I'm just going to be real, real, real with you and honest. The government is freaking out right now. We are now being held, and I say we because I am a government employee, being held to results. Whereas, you know, in the previous administration, it was great effort. We've turned over X amount of letters. That's wonderful. We've sent X amount of emails. That's great. This administration is acting more of, we appreciate your effort, but we're paying you for results. And it has really put people in a state of flux. Some of them are very, very happy. Some of them are very, very, very afraid. Some of them are confused. When you get a massive amount of people, all kind of understanding that there's been a change, not all of them react in a great positive way. And so there has been some improvement. And I will tell you, and they still, you know, there is still that small group of people who throw in, you know, like obstacles. But yes, it has been changing because now people understand that there's a new administration, the standards are going to be new, and they understand that results are expected. And they understand that now the pressure is really going to be put on. Some people aren't handling it well, but it's like it's trying to move a big battleship on a dime. You can't. It's got to be a big, long curve because it's a big apparatus. You've got to get it moving around. And so that's what's happening. I do feel that it is moving in the right direction, and people are starting to understand that they're going to be held accountable. I just don't know how fast it'll be able to switch, but I do see it improving.
Well, it's got to improve. Let's go back to immigration for a moment. I've got a question here for someone who emailed me, Jan, and interesting enough, she's here on in Arizona as well from Lake Havasu, and she said, "Dear Dave, would you please ask Teresa about what she and the congressman are finding with regard to terrorists and potential weapons of mass destruction coming into the United States because of our open borders?"
Well, I can tell you that a lot of things have happened. In the prior administration, I used to get notifications maybe once, twice a week. At the most, it was three times, but at least once or twice a week about apprehensions. Not necessarily weapons of mass destruction, more along the lines of significant amount of money, drugs, and people. And so we really haven't found a situation where there were weapons, to my knowledge, that have been caught. Those apprehensions have gone down because there's less people coming across the border. And I know that sounds a little bit, you know, weird, but because President Trump is in office, there are a lot of people who are now uneasy about coming. So I know that the apprehensions have dropped because the people are not coming over the border as much as they used to. And I know there's not really a way to prove that other than, you know, what we hear and what we see. And we do have a lot of tips on the ground that will call us up and say, "Hey, you need to get down here," or, "Hey, we've been seeing this." We had a gentleman, and you and I spoke about this earlier, Dave. We had a tip from, I don't want to say a whistleblower, but we had a tip from a gentleman, an elected official in our area. And basically he said, "Please come down. The congressman needs to see this. We are having Haitians coming in into Arizona, and it's an obscene, it's unusual amount. And they're being dropped off behind the Walmart, and this is," so he was really freaked out. So the congressman, myself, and our district director, Penny Pugh, went to the border unannounced. And we went in, and we knocked on the door, and I said, "Hello, I'm Teresa. We need to see, you know, the port director." The port director, being a friend of mine, great guy, was not aware. His first thing out of his mouth wasn't, "I didn't know you were coming." That's the point. We want to see what's going on. We had a tip, and we need to come and see this. And so as we take a, I don't want to say a tour because it's not much of a tour, when we get to the border, which is basically about 100 yards from where we were standing at the front door, we see maybe about 10 Haitians along, intermingled with some of the Mexican nationals that were coming through with permission. And when I say with permission, they had papers to come through, whether it be, you know, work documents or they were going to school or whatever it was. They had permission to come through. And as we started talking to them, we had about 50 surround us. And they literally came out of the woodwork. And so when we were talking to these folks, and we kind of get a handle on the situation and we talk to the port director, we start to walk out. The port director puts his hand on my shoulder and says, thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. And you can see that the people on the border are really trying to do the right thing. They need help because sometimes their boss's boss is not the best. I don't want to say their visions don't align, but their idea of border security is different than, you know, maybe what it should ought to be.
Yeah,
but long story short,
you're being kind. I look at these people.
Well, long story short, the border is more secure today than it was 2 or 3 years ago. Trust me, it is.
I agree with that.
Go ahead.
No, I agree with that totally. It has been.
Right, and so what we're getting from on the ground is that less people are trying to come through in over the border. So I think that's a good thing. Now it's just a matter of, you know, trying to get a handle on people who are here, who have overstayed their visitors' visas, people who are here already, and then just trying to get the right people in.
Well, I would agree. Where are we at with DACA? Where does that stand right now?
Well, I would imagine there's going to be a fight. I would imagine that, you know, I can't speculate on DACA because I know that the Senate is trying to put something together on through the deadline. I don't know if they'll make the deadline. There has not been a bill for there to be voted on. And so, unfortunately, that's kind of what I have there. At this point, to my knowledge, there is no bill to be voted on, and they're trying to create a bill. I do think that the Senate is trying to take that lead.
What is your office's position on DACA generally?
The law is the law. You have to follow the law. Whether you're Hispanic, whether you're here, whether you're Asian, whether you're Native American, you know, you have to come into this country legally. There is a process legally currently as we stand now where if you are here illegally, you can file what is called an I-601A waiver. That means that you can file and you can say, I am here illegally, but I want to immigrate into the United States legally. And there's a special waiver that the government gives you. So anybody who was born here could apply for immigration. You know, well, certain there are certain avenues, but we'd like the congressman's view is the law is the law. You have to follow the law. If you're here illegally, then you're here illegally. And, you know, you'll have to immigrate just like everybody else. It's not fair for the people who've been standing in line for 10, 12, 15 years trying to come into this country legally. It's not fair for you to jump in front of them and say, mea culpa, now you got to give me and everybody in my family, you know, cuts in line when other people have been waiting. So, you know, the offices, you know, we don't mean to be mean. It's just, the law applies to everyone equally the same. End of story.
Yeah, and it should. One of the things that really irritates my listeners, and I hear about this whenever we talk about immigration on the air, is the chain migration with DACA. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, you know, we can make an argument when you came here when you were two, you had no choice, and you're a person in good standing, you contribute to your community. We can make that argument, but on the other side of the coin, Teresa, you know, the first cousin to the second cousin of your next door neighbor coming in, most Americans have a problem with chain migration. Let's just go there. Go ahead.
Well, let's talk about, if you're, let's say, for example, you were brought into this country illegally at 2 years old. You go to school, you fall in love, you marry an American citizen. That American citizen can now apply for you, and you can apply to become legal. Not all of them have done that. Now, certainly that's not a venue for all of them. That's not an avenue for all of them. Maybe they're not married, or maybe they're married to another illegal person, and then they wouldn't be able to do that. So for those people, you know, if we were to give them legal, you know, if they're saying, well, we can't go back to our home country because we've never met, or we've never been to our home country, it's like a foreign country to us, I can understand that to a point. But on the other hand, you know, it is still your home country. If you want legal, you know, full full rights. You can go back to home to your home country and get full rights as a citizen. The chain migration is something that you'd have to be an American for X amount of years, and then you can only apply for your mom and dad, and any siblings under the age of 21. So any siblings over the age of 21, you cannot apply for them, or they go back to the back, way, way back of the line, and they're waiting 25 years to come through. So the chain migration is of concern. I know that the congressman is not thrilled that you're able to come and bring in, you know, your mom and your dad and your sister and your brother after you jump the line. He wants the law to be followed. And, you know, there is a provision in the law that says you can petition for your immediate relatives. So cousins and uncles wouldn't be kind of thrown in there. It would just be immediate family. But even still, you know, we still, it's almost like we're rewarding people for breaking the law. And, you know, I know that, you know, there's been some heavy discussion with changing that. And I think that it's going to depend on the language that's put into the bill. I know that it is a concern of many, many people. And, you know, that's something that we're going to have to correct.
Yeah, absolutely. That's not going to go away until it's dealt with directly. But then we have the obstructionists on the left. And it just seems like anything short of full amnesty is unacceptable to the Chuck Schumers and the Nancy Pelosi's. I mean, is that how, am I interpreting that correctly, that they just want blatant?
No, you are interpreting that correctly, that unless they get, you know, full amnesty for the Dreamer and their moms and dads, because you look at, first there was DACA, and then what did the Obama administration try to do but push DAPA for the parents so they can stay together? And I know it's a rude and horrible comment to say, well, you can all stay together in your home country. You know, if you came here at 2 years old and you go back to your home country and you don't know anybody, well, if your mom and dad go with you, then you'll at least know them. And since it's their home country and they grew up there, they'll be able to help navigate you as a family. So if you want to stay together, you know, you can all go back to your home country and stay together there with full citizenship rights, and then all of a sudden you're heartless and you're cruel and you're, you know, how can you say that you have no feelings? I get called, I'm Hispanic, by the way, I get called a Nazi all the time because I, along with several other Hispanics, you know, want equal law. I mean, when you've come into this country legally, and you've paid your dues, you've paid your fines, it's a lengthy process, you've done everything you were supposed to do, which is a hard process, the last thing you want to see is somebody get in by cheating. And so, you know, for the Chuck Schumers and the Nancy Pelosi's of the world to paint the Hispanic culture all with one brush, and every Hispanic is going to, you know, not vote for any Republican who's against DACA, that's just silly. That's just ridiculous. Lots of Hispanics, you know, want legal and correct immigration. And yes, we feel for them, you know, if you're 2 years old and you're 18 now and you're kind of on your own, you don't want to go back home to a country you've never get, we get that. There has to be something in line for that. But, you know, first things first, we got to take care of, you know, the people who are here who are not doing, you know, good things, the bad hombres, as President Trump suggests, you know, and we have to start saying, okay, look, you know, the people who have committed crimes need to be deported. Right now, it's hard to deport somebody who broke the law. And I'm not talking the law about being in this country illegally. I'm talking like shoplifting and stealing a car and you know, robbery and, you know, oh, well, you know, you have to give them a chance. A chance for what? So right now, immigration, the Customs and Enforcement folks are actually, you know, doing what they've always wanted to do and deport people who are criminals. Now we're running into the problem that there's not enough judges. And so it's really, like I said, it's a big thing to fix, and it's going to take time. And we are moving in the right direction, so I don't want anybody to think that we're not. We are moving in the right direction. It's just, you know, we have really gone to the edge, and pulling it back is going to take some time.
we really have gone to the edge. And unfortunately, Obama had 8 years to appoint a bunch of liberals who think they have the right to ignore the Constitution and our statutory laws. And that's part of the reason we find ourselves in the mess we're in, and they're still in their judgeships. Let's talk about something that the nation really paid attention to with regard to the murder of Kate Steinle. San Francisco, sanctuary city, California, sanctuary state. And right here in Arizona, Teresa, Phoenix, Mayor Stanton, sanctuary city for all intents and purposes. I've had enough. We shouldn't be sanctuary anything to people who are breaking the law.
I agree. I can tell you that, and I also know that there are several Phoenix residents who are completely beside themselves. And I think that, you know, he's that, and I'm speculating, I don't want to speculate about Mayor Stanton, but, you know, he's got bigger aspirations with Congress. And so I don't know how much of this is a platform or how much of this he really believes, or maybe it's both. It is a sad sight to see a judge, I believe in the Ninth Circuit, say to the federal government, it is, you know, you must give sanctuary cities for, you know, public safety and for the grants. I think that this is going to be something that the Supreme Court is going to have to weigh in on, where, you know, Attorney General Sessions is going to have to go face to face with the likes of the of Eric Holder, who is working for California now, and they're going to have the Supreme Court rule, because we have all these liberal judges who are saying, no, can't do this. You have to give them the money. It's not fair. You know, it's for X, Y, and Z, and I think that people, if states, you know, you need to follow the law to get federal dollars. End of story. You know, we don't just, you know, the federal government just doesn't give you the money and say, hey, good luck, have fun with that. No, they need to, there are rules and stipulations on how you spend that money. And, you know, the administration has determined that you are not going to be able, you know, we're not going to give you this money if you don't follow the law. Not laws that you like and laws that you don't like, but you must follow the law. I do believe this is going to have to go all the way up to the Supreme Court.
I agree. And you really identified it well, because it's the left, as I call them, or the Democrats, which they primarily are, they think they can pick and choose what laws they follow. And this is part of the reason we've had 8 years of chaos under Obama and why our country is in such a mess today. And quite frankly, the people need to be, well, let me just put it this way. If I could wave a magic wand, Teresa, I would start a wave of petitions called Recall. And I would oust these liberal judges. I would oust mayors like Stanton, who seem to be, they don't care about the safety of their own people. We're a sanctuary city. We don't care what they do. Rapists, murderers, robbers, they can come here and we'll protect them from the big bad federal government and justice. It drives me up the wall.
Well, and unfortunately, I think that, you know, well, let me re-say this. I believe that President Trump has the foresight to play the long game. And what I mean by that is, I know that he's going to, he has probably already started appointing judges. And really, the Democrats have been very good at playing the long game. And that's why you have such a hard start now. It's kind of like a marriage also, though. You know, when you're married, that first year of marriage is not the easiest. They say if you can survive the first year of marriage, you're doing great. So I do believe that the president did have a hard year, but I do think that he's had a lot of successes. And one of the things you have to look at with Trump is he's playing the long game. He's not playing for the short win. He's not trying, and he's not afraid. He's not afraid to fight. And he's fighting three different people. He's fighting the media. He's fighting, you know, some of the elected officials, you know, and I'm not going to name names of who he's fighting and who he's not fighting with, but we all know in the political process, you know, who he's fighting with on the political stage. And then he's sometimes, and he's fighting the agencies that he oversees, you know, the Department of Homeland Security. And what I mean by that, and the Department of Veterans Affairs and Social Security, is you have the middle management folks that run the everyday lives and are used, they have a work culture that has been in place for a decade, if not more, of being stagnant, of being complacent, of being reactive instead of proactive. And now they're waking up to, oh my gosh, what do you mean you want results? And there's a shakeup. And so a lot of them are not reacting everybody is reacting. Some of them, hey, this is about time. And some of them, oh my God, now what? And that's what all the chaos is you're seeing within the agencies. Some of them will leave on their own because it's too much for them. Some of them will adapt and move forward. And some of them will take up and lead and run like they've been wanting to because they've been held back for so long. So that's at least some good news.
Well, that is good news, but it's painfully slow. And, of course, I guess you can't ignore 30 years of neglect. In your estimation from your office, do you have a figure about how many people currently reside inside the United States without documentation? Are there any estimates?
Oh, no, I don't think anybody does. I mean, there's a guess. I mean, there's guests there, you know, but I don't think anybody knows that real number.
Well, you know what I don't want to hear? I don't want to hear the number 11 million, because I heard the number 11 million back in the 1980s. And we're supposed to believe that the numbers have not increased?
Yeah, I wouldn't even want to speculate as to a number, because how can you count something you don't see? How can you report on something that nobody reports on? It's not like there's some sort of big convention in Phoenix saying, everybody here illegal? Okay, let's take a head count, and then it's an approximate. And then, you know, when you say, well, you get the numbers from the port of entry and the Border Patrol, well, again, all they can say is these are just hypothetical numbers. We had 1,000 apprehensions in the month of May. We had 500 apprehensions in the month of, you know, December. You know, I mean, that's all they're reporting on is apprehensions and people crossing over. And then in the port, they're coming through the port, but they're identifying themselves. So if they're coming through and Border Patrol isn't catching them, then how do we know if it was 1 or 100? We don't. We don't know. And that's just the hard truth.
But Teresa, CNN told me they knew when they keep reporting 11.5 million. And
well,
I believe everything the fake news media tells me, so it must be 11.5 million.
Unless there's some sort of secret meeting that they're invited to that I have missed that memo, I don't know how they would get that number. I mean, we can say 11.5 if it makes everybody feel better, but, you know, at the end of the day, we just simply don't know, because we're counting things we're not catching.
I know. And it only takes one with a suitcase nuke to ruin our day. And I think that's the basic fear of every American.
I agree with you.
I remember James Comey said, I believe it was a year ago, I think it was July 4th, 2015, and he said, ISIS is in every single state. There are terror cells in every state. And that ran for a couple days in the major media. And I remember thinking, well, yeah, how'd they get here, Mr. Comey? You didn't tell us. And that is why the immigration issue is so important. And then we look at, and I don't know if you guys deal with this end of it or not, but I've interviewed ex-DEA, ex-whatever officials, and there was a police memo out of Tucson back in 2010 that tied together the drug cartels and Hezbollah, Hamas, and now in modern era, you got Al-Qaeda and ISIS part of this. So they're joining forces. Do you guys deal with that at all on an organized criminal international conspiracy of terrorists coming into the country? I mean, do you take that angle?
You know, we have an agency, a counter intelligence agency in Phoenix that works with law enforcement, FBI. I do believe the reports that there are at least one in every state. And I think that the intelligence committee is probably, I'm sure the congressman himself, along with our legislative director, has, you know, more insight on that than I do. I will say that I do believe former director, and I love to say former FBI director Comey, when he says that it's here in every state. And I think that, you know, when you look at some of the people that they have caught Yes, it is open borders, but we also have to start looking at our visitor visas. And some of, because, I mean, you look at the San Bernardino. San Bernardino was done by a woman who was coming in, you know, and he was an American. And so I do think that when it comes to ISIS and those terrorists, I think that they're trying to aim, and this is just my opinion, this is not a fact, just my opinion, that they are trying to recruit more homegrown folks to get in here, because crossing over the border into Mexico is very difficult, is very dangerous, because if you're ISIS and you're coming through and you're one guy and you meet up with MS-13 and you say the wrong word, I mean, that's not going to end well. Plus, even though our border is attempted to on a daily basis all the time, those folks down there are very, very good. And, you know, I trust that they're going to be right more often than not. And so I believe that that's why you see ISIS sort of morphing into trying to recruit homegrown terrorists into the United States, or maybe Westerners to come through, because actually sending ISIS folks over into the border is probably more difficult than the other. And I think they're just going to go the path of least resistance.
I think you're absolutely right, and that is a problem when we look at the international cartel. And we're even, you know, this is something I've covered a lot from both ex-intel, ex-agency people, as well as witnesses on the ground. San Salvador has terrorist base camps training these people, and I've been getting these reports for 3 years. And you know that they're slipping into this country, and this is my major concern. It's not the person that comes here, Teresa, that really raises my eyebrows, because they want to do landscaping or work on us, or work in the restaurants while they're waiting on us. Those people aren't a threat. They need to come in legally. I agree with you, but it's the terrorists and the homegrown people that they recruit is where really I have my major concern. And I think we led an MS-13 in 2014 in that Central American invasion. I think we've got the beginnings of a fifth column invasion force if ever we have to go to war. I mean, have you guys ever discussed that on your staff?
No, not at the level that I sit in on. I know that, mm-hmm. you know, when the congressman discussed those issues, he discusses them with the chief of staff, and he discusses them with the legislative director, and then the policy experts that they have on the Hill.
That's true.
So, well, you know, I'm just not at that level. I know that the congressman is. And I know that he has talked about the concerns. And I think that's why the wall is so important. And I think that building it in California, I don't know if you know this or if your viewers know this, but the prototypes of the wall, and I think there's five, are in California, in the southern portion of the state, to where they are on the border looking at the wall, and they have five different prototypes to see which wall they're going to go with. And I think the president strategically put it in California because Arizona is a tough border to cross. It is easier, both the terrain and just, you know, the diligence of the workers, the diligence of the population. You know, we will have the population on the border come up and say, hey, you know, they'll call Congressman Gosar, or they'll call their local sheriff, and they'll call, you know, they're a little more diligent than, say, people in California. And so going through the California border is easier, much easier, than going through Arizona and Texas. And so I think that's why they put those prototypes down there in South California, so that word will get back very easy, that the president's very serious about that. It's just now trying to figure out where we actually are from the last 8 years.
That's true. What's going to have to happen do we really get the wall up? Is it going to be take an act of Congress funding it to the tune of $20 billion? Is that what it's going to take?
Yeah, I would imagine so. It's probably going to take an act and a fight.
Because I know when the president he said, we're going to make Mexico pay for it. Of course, I think that was campaign bluster. But do you think he's going to get the wall done? What's your guess?
I do. He already has the prototype. I do think he's going to get it done. I think that, you know, you have five prototypes already built. I think now, and it's been very quiet on that end, so I'm very curious to see if they've already chosen one, to see if they've, if they haven't chosen one, that they're getting close to choose one. I think that they're getting a lot of input and a lot of buy-in, and I think that you're going to see some movement. I do think that, you know, timing is everything, and whether it comes, you know, the timing of you know, this following year, which will be an election year, or the year after, I can see the president pushing and saying, you know, tell your congressman to vote for the wall, to vote for the wall, to vote for the wall, vote for the funding of the wall. I can see that as a mantra, you know, going forward in the political season. I'm not really sure what that political game he's playing, but I do think that he's sincere, and I do think that he has already got the prototypes built. Not a lot of fanfare, not a lot of protest, just they're up, and they've been up. And I don't know that CNN covered that. If they did, I'm sure it was just a day. And so that's been very quiet. But I do think that the wall is going to be filled up, especially if this president gets 8 years instead of four.
That's going to be a challenge unto itself, but that's another topic for another time. Now, Congressman Gozar has an election coming up this next year. All the members of the House are up every 2 years. And I'm sure you guys are gearing up. What kind of preparations are you doing right now in anticipation of the 2018 election?
Well, we always go through. The congressman is very in tune grassroots-wise. He has tons of town halls, tons of live Facebook town halls. And so we've always do that. In regards to election, you know, we start the process where we start collecting signatures. We start, you know, looking at, you know, the numbers and the precincts, and we start, you know, going out and grassrooting. But, you know, the congressman has an outstanding customer service, and he is out in the public a lot. And so it's like he never stops. It's like we're always campaigning because he wants to be in tune with the public, so.
Yeah, you forgot to mention the Common Sense Show, too.
And, oh, the Common Sense Show.
Yeah, don't forget that, Teresa. Well, we're going to get him on. We want to get the congressman on in January, because I know after that his schedule is going to get quite hectic because of the campaigning and all the serious issues we got going on inside the country. Well, I tell people across the country that Congressman Gozar is one of the good guys. And that he
is. Thank you.
He stands for the Constitution. We're lucky. We have a few of them here in Arizona. And between Darren Dammy and myself, we've managed to interview a number of them. And I think it's true in Arizona, Teresa, because our issues are so critical, because we are the point of entry for terrorists, or the point of entry for people who may not be nice people crossing the border that we got to worry about. And I think our elected leaders, for the most part, we won't talk about the mayor of Phoenix, but most of them are concerned about the safety and welfare of their citizens. And so I just wanted to give that shout out to Congressman Gozar and your staff. And you've been very, very generous with your time. And I appreciate the contacts you've opened up for us here at the Common Sense Show. And we hope that you'll keep in touch.
Excellent. Yes. Thank you so very much, Dave, for having me. I appreciate it.
Teresa Martinez, it was our privilege and pleasure. And say hello to Congressman Gozar for us.
I will. Thank you.
That's Teresa Martinez from Congressman Gozar's staff, and she is the point person for immigration. You can hear there were some really pointed comments there about sanctuary cities, about coming in the right way. And although you could hear a little bit of concern and empathy for kids who maybe were brought here against their will but illegally, that we still have to do things under the color of law. Boy, is that missing on the left. And you heard me say, I had a discussion with a Democrat, okay, not too long ago, and really kind of a nice person, but they're as liberal as the day is long, and sometimes they don't engage their brain before they speak. But one time they said something to me that really, really got my attention. I said, can you make sense out of these actions for me? And I don't remember what they were, but they were nonsensical. And they said, Dave, you're missing the point. It's not about the issues with us. We're no longer in power. It's about keeping the fight going. In other words, it didn't matter what the answer was or justification to position or anything else. It was a matter of blocking conservatives and conservative Christians from getting their way. And I get it. I get it. I see it every day. And it's, you know, rules for radicals. It's Saul Alinsky all over again. And this is what we're seeing in the George Soros organizations all across our country. Rules for radicals. That's what the Democrats embrace. And let me go to the big gun here. I'm convinced, after dialoguing back and forth with Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, interviewing Robert David Steele, formerly the CIA clandestine officer, and also the work of former Congressman West, and the investigative work of Trevor Loudon, and that great documentary that you can, I think, only watch on Amazon Prime called Enemies Within. 80 congressmen and senators belonging to front groups of the American Communist Party, of which they admitted on tape that they campaigned openly for Al Franken and went door to door. And they also are members of front groups for the Muslim Brotherhood. I didn't say Muslim mosque. That would be fine. I'm talking about the biggest terrorist organization on the planet. And isn't it interesting that nobody, except a few of us in the independent media, ever questioned the president about Malik Obama, his half-brother, who's the head of finance and arms procurement for the Muslim Brotherhood? Saving that as a side. But when we look at the Democrats, they seem to be intent with their leadership on deculturizing America. Immigrants coming in, and this happened all through the 19th century, typically add to the culture, the richness of our country, but not the way we're screen and vet and quarantine and look for illnesses. Minnesota has an outbreak of deadly TB. The thinking is it came from Somalis. Maybe it's time we started acting like it was 1880 and act in behest and on behalf of the American people. Thanks again to Teresa Martinez for joining us from Congressman Paul Gosar's office. We'll be back after the break. I have a few news and comments, and then we'll be joined by Darren Dammey.